It is 4 o'clock in Salford. How are you doing? You well? I hope all is good with you. I'm Richie Allen. The BBG Thursday's programme, 4th of April 2024. I'm really looking forward to it. Join in as usual by sending me a message via the Richie Allen Show app or use the website richieallen.co.uk.
Uncensored, unfiltered. You're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, you might remember this, you might not remember it. I can't remember what I did yesterday, but I do remember speaking to Dan from a band called Whom By Fire last year. Dan and Eliza. They were cancelled. They had gigs cancelled for speaking out against the sexualisation of children. They've had other gigs cancelled since, including a church gig. Because of this, because of that, they've decided to start their own record label. It's called Wrong Think Records. They've got an album coming out pretty soon, and they want Wrong Think Records to be a platform not only for themselves but for other artists who are passionate about free speech, freedom of expression. So Whom By Fire, Dan and Eliza will be on the programme a little bit later on this hour. I'm really looking forward to speaking with them. As usual, I've mentioned already, if you'd like to join in, if there's something you'd like to tell me via the website or the app. Thanks for downloading the app, by the way. Many people have. It's nice. And thank you for leaving a review for it when you do download it as well. Listen, quick bit of housekeeping. Mentioned yesterday, some people were complaining about not being able to access the Richie Allen Show on iTunes, which is Apple. Thankfully, I put out a call to you and asked you, if you do use iTunes to listen to the Richie Allen Show, are you still able to? Thankfully, the majority of people who came back to me said, yes, we are. That is a good thing. Some said no, but many of them who said no are trying to grab the programme from other parts of the world. So I don't know what's going on. I think the best thing to do is, and it's not just with my podcast, and by the way, the podcast is a byproduct of the live radio show. It is a live radio show first and foremost, okay? But the podcast, yes, if you use any provider and if there is an issue, drop them a line and say, why can I no longer download whichever podcast it is you are not getting? That is my advice. Okie dokie. Right, let's go to the Independent today. Yeah. Sometimes I did double check the date to make sure that this had not been published on April 1st. I actually did that. I was sent an article that appeared in the Independent or on the Independent's website, and I had to do a double take to make sure that it hadn't been published on April 1st, which, if memory serves, was last Monday. It was. The headline kind of says it all. It's real. How climate change is hitting vulnerable Indonesian trans sex workers.
Fuck off.
No, I'm serious.
Fuck off.
Climate change is hitting vulnerable Indonesian trans sex workers. It's messing with their business. Did you hear that, Tom?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
Climate change is to blame, Tom, because trannies, ladyboys in Indonesia, are not having... They're losing clients. They don't have as much business, and it's all down to climate change. Yoya Patiha, a 43-year-old Indonesian transgender woman, first started to notice that the changing weather patterns in the mountain ring city of Bandung were affecting her income as a sex worker a decade ago. So it's not just climate change in 2024. This has been affecting the ladyboys of Indonesia for over a decade now. Yoya Patiha, I'll go on with say she said, no one is coming out during the longer rainy season. Where are you having sex with your clients? I don't get this. Where are you having sex with your clients? How could the weather be affecting it? Anyway, Indonesia is particularly vulnerable to the effects of climate change, and trans women, who tend to face more stigma and marginalisation than trans men or other LGBTQ plus people, they are also among those hardest hit by extreme weather. I swear to God, that's in the Independent today. Honestly. Yeah. I do honestly believe. I have said to you on this programme in the past, there is a department, a Great Reset department. It's a humour department. They sit around and they think up, how can we push them? How can we push the Great Unwashed? How can we get very close to the edge without crossing over it in terms of, you know, revealing what's really going on? What will we get them to believe today? Anyway, I'm still laughing about yesterday's story about the non-binary dude in Canada who wants the taxpayers to pay for him to have a vagina built while also keeping his functional penis. And of course, if this is allowed, eventually non-binaries will be asking for more than one vagina. There's a lot of room on my lower back for a vagina. We could have two. We could have an orgy. We could have it all. I can keep my penis. Do you like that? Climate change is hitting vulnerable trans sex workers in Indonesia. What will they blame climate change on next? Who knows? Let's talk about Gaza. It is just after 6 minutes past five. Now, the latest. You'll know that 7 aid workers, were murdered on Monday by the Israeli Defence Forces, which continues, in the face of all the evidence, to the contrary, it continues to say it was just an accident. It's one of these things that happens in war zones. It tends to happen a lot, though, with Israel, doesn't it? So since Monday, no aid trucks have entered northern Gaza. This is a problem. Pressure here in the UK is growing on Rishi Sunak's government to suspend arms sales to Israel, and more than 600 legal experts have written to Sunak saying experts must end. Now, World Central Kitchen and the aid workers who were killed were working for World Central Kitchen. The founder is Jose Andres. He's accused Israeli forces in Gaza of targeting his workers systematically, car by car. The economy minister of Israel, Nir Barkat, told the BBC this was nonsense. And as I have mentioned yesterday and this morning on the Papers podcast, some charities have paused their operations since the murders because they're terrified their workers will be next. And this has increased further fears of starvation. Now, there's been a big change in the tone of the coverage of Gaza here in the UK, the coverage by the mainstream media. I think it's because 600 judges, lawyers, academics have written to Sunak to say the government is violating international law by arming Israel. Let's hear Sir Alan Duncan, former Tory foreign minister. He was on LBC this morning. You very rarely hear anything like this on Britain's mainstream media. Sir Alan Duncan, listen.
There are a lot of people at the top of our own politics who refuse to condemn settlements and therefore are not supporters of international law. And I think the time has come to flush out those extremists in our own parliamentary politics and around it, some of whom are at the very top of government or have been, and they have never been called to account by journalists and the press to say, well, do you agree with your own party's policy? Do you condemn illegal settlements? And I will name them now. The Conservative Friends of Israel has been doing the bidding of Netanyahu, bypassing all proper processes of government to exercise undue influence at the top of government. So what you have is a lot of people now sitting around Rishi Sunak who are giving him appalling advice. Let's start with the head of CFI, or has been for many years, Lord Pollack. In my view, I think he should be removed from the Lords.
CFI is the Conservative Friends of Israel, just in case you missed it. He wants this guy kicked out of the House of Lords. This is extraordinary.
Because he is exercising the interests of another country, not that of the parliament in which he sits. Joined, I have to say, by Lord Pickles. They're the sort of Laurel and Hardy who should be pushed out together.
Eric Pickles is the former MP now in the Lords who is so fat. And I don't mean to be unkind, but I want you to remember who he is. He is so fat, Pickles. He has his own postcode.
But at the top, I mean, slightly improved by the removal of Robert Jenrick and Suella Braverman, although even today she is still supporting Israel and the bombing and the annihilation of people in Gaza.
The presenter is Nick Ferrari, Jabba the Hutt. He is absolutely incredulous. He's speechless. He doesn't know what to say, so he says nothing, which is good.
And she does not believe that settlements are wrong, nor, I suspect, do Michael Gove, Oliver Dowden, and Priti Patel, by the way, should be reinvestigated for her visit. We still don't know who paid for her trip when she came back and tried to change government policy.
This is amazing stuff. I mean, you might remember when Boris Johnson was Prime Minister, Priti Patel was Home Secretary. She took her annual leave like everybody else, was out seeking permission from the government, or at least notifying the government. The Home Secretary, Patel, travelled to Israel, spent her holiday in Israel, again didn't inform the Foreign Office, didn't speak to anybody, and came back and began to lobby even hard for Israel. Long-time listeners to this programme will remember me talking about this. She should have been put on trial for treason. Now, that might sound exceptionally over the top, but it was treachery. She took a holiday, this very senior government cabinet secretary, pissed off to Israel, told nobody, came back and began to argue for an Israeli position. She basically came back to lobby for the Israeli government. This is absolutely staggering stuff by Alan Duncan. And at no time does Nick Ferrari try to stop him. I don't understand why. I don't believe that Alan Duncan has suddenly come over all virtuous and all decent. I don't know what's going on here. Maybe you can help me out. But it goes on.
As a result of going on a secret trip without actually telling her officials or even the local ambassador.
She told nobody, Patel. Imagine it. He goes on. Again, Ferrari is sitting there.
If you pick up Wikipedia and you read the entry for Tom Tugendhat, who is our security minister.
Oh, what a dipstick Tugendhat is. We've gotten into Tugendhat on this programme many times over the years. There's never been a greater whore for Israel than Tugendhat.
It says, and I'll read it out, he condemned the United Nations Security Council for its official criticism of Israel's building settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. Now, that may have been some years ago, but he's never removed that. He's never changed his view. How can you have a security minister in the British government who does not believe in international law when all this is going on? I think he should be sacked.
He should be sacked. He should be sacked. Now, it was announced this afternoon that the Conservative Party has ordered an investigation into Sir Alan Duncan, one of their own. I would imagine the phones never stopped ringing today in the MP offices, well, Conservative Party MP offices, and in the Cabinet Secretary offices. I would imagine it was bedlam today. What do we do about this? A very senior former Tory foreign minister is suggesting that some of the most high-profile politicians in the government should be fired because, effectively, they are operating on behalf of the State of Israel. This is amazing stuff. He went on to say this about the arms.
We should stop arms sales immediately. I think that anything in support of what is becoming a total catastrophe in Gaza is morally unacceptable. And what we have to accept is it's not just what they're doing now is wrong, it's what Israel's been doing for years has been wrong, because the Israeli Defense Force does not follow international law. It has been backing and supporting illegal settlers in the West Bank who steal Palestinian land. And it is that land theft, that annexation of Palestine, which is the origin of the problem, which has given rise to the Hamas atrocity and the battles we're seeing.
Wow. Alan Duncan speaking to LBC Radio this morning. On the Indonesian trans sex workers, Anthony says, maybe the climate change and hotter weather is making, and you can fill in that blank yourself, dear listener, this is a family show. Tim says, hello Tim, hi to Sam, who says, Richie, surely Al Gore has something to do with these climate perverts not getting a leg over. Amsterdam will close next due to flooding, I'm sure. Not the coffee shops, though, please, says Sam. Hi to Keely, who says, thank you, Keely. Babs has said, thanks for calling out Nick Ferrari yesterday. Why has he and others suddenly developed a conscience now? Seeing thousands of innocent children being bombed, maimed and wrapped in shrouds clearly wasn't enough for him to say enough. The total obliteration of a people and its city wasn't enough for him to say stop. Shame on all of those who've watched this genocide for almost 6 months. I think the answer to that, Babs, might be, and it's only a guess, I think the likes of Ferrari and one or two other presenters today, they feel they've got cover now because 600 lawyers, we'll talk about it in a minute, 600 lawyers, judges and academics have accused the government of guilt. They've said you are guilty of crimes against humanity. You are as guilty as Israel because you armed them, knowing Israel is committing genocide in Palestine. And maybe this has given the cover, the necessary cover, for people like Ferrari, in this case today, just to sit there and shut up. I mean, previously, Duncan would have been kicked off. So I'm very, very, very interested in this. Ian says one possible explanation for the seeming U-turn from those pro-Israeli types is that they were previously strong-armed by Mossad. Now they're smelling blood in the water, so they're sharpening their harpoons, says Ian. Might be the case, I don't know. It is very, very interesting then. So let's talk then about the, and just to mention again, the Tories have opened an official investigation into Duncan. They are horrified that he did this, and he didn't only do it on LBC. He also went on Times Radio. I think he was on BBC Radio this morning as well, saying the same thing. Now, three former Supreme Court justices, including the former president of the Supreme Court, Lady Hale, are among, as I've already said, 600 lawyers, retired senior judges and academics. They've told the government, you are breaching international law by continuing to arm Israel. So they wrote a letter to Sunak. This was seen by The Guardian. The Guardian went big, understandably, on the story today. The Guardian saw the letter, 17 pages. It's a legal opinion. The Labour Party is screaming from the rooftops. We want to see the letter. The government must publish it. It should be published. As far as I know, and if I'm wrong, please let me know and I will correct myself, but it hasn't been published by the government yet. Now, Michael Mansfield, King's Counsel, barrister, human rights barrister, has signed the letter. And he was on Sky News today discussing it. Let's have a listen, Michael Mansfield.
Well, actually, over many years, I was going to say ever since October, but long before that, I've been concerned about crimes being committed in the Middle East by the Israeli government over a period of time. And I'm supported in that by a judgment by the International Court of Justice at The Hague in 2004. It's called The Wall, where the court itself said then, as an advisory opinion, that Israel was breaking international law. It's continued to do so ever since, as well as before that. So I'm committed to the idea of ensuring what I've really spent my life doing, which is upholding the rule of law and trying to get it implemented and enforced. That's why I've done it.
Is this a very clear legal decision, hence you signing this letter, or is it not more a political one?
Well, depends how you define...
That is a pathetic question by the interviewer, isn't it? He's basically saying, is this a political thing? In other words, he might as well come out and say it. Are the 600 judges, are they Labour supporters by any chance? And they're looking for an opportunity to bash the Tories.
Politics, does it not? I don't think any of us live outside politics with a small p. Coming from the Greek word polis, it's to do with matters of state. And I think we're all affected and we're all involved. I leave out the, you know, party political aspect. In other words, whether you're Tory, Labour or whatever you are, I'm dealing with it in the true sense of political, moral and legal. They're interlinked. So it's really a key, for me anyway, a moral issue. One of the reasons I became a lawyer was, in fact, to prevent gunboat diplomacy, to prevent, you know, beating each other's brains out. You try and settle matters in a much more civilized way. That's the object of this, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. So I don't see it as political with a big P, I see it as political with a small one, combined with moral.
Good answer.
Well, we're obliged to because, again, at the end of the Second World War, there were moves to...
He was asked about Britain's obligation to stop arming Israel. Why should the government be obliged not to arm Israel was the question.
Well, we're obliged to because, again, at the end of the Second World War, there were moves to ensure, legally speaking and internationally, we didn't face the situation that was faced at the end of the war and during the last World War, Second World War, again. So provisions were put in place whereby, firstly, you can self-defend, which is used all the time. However, there's a limit to it. You can't obliterate somebody else altogether, especially a civilian population that has to be protected. And those people who got killed recently, 7 people providing aid, they're protected citizens. And therefore, it seems to me that there is a crime committed by other states. It's called erga omnes. In other words, international law has said you can't creep out of this because you haven't signed up to that. You haven't signed up to that. There's an international obligation on all of us to respect the law. And where there's something as bad as genocide, we should not only not commit it, but there's an obligation on the English government, all governments, to prevent it happening. Even if it's not happening on our shores, it's got to be stopped elsewhere because we're one humanity. And I think at the moment, this issue is on the screens every day and people are united by a sense of humanity. The law has to step in and be respected.
Yeah, the presenter is being screamed at by the gallery to go after Mansfield over his use of the term genocide.
But I'm right in saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that we don't know that genocide has happened. Fact, probably...
We don't know.
Probably, no, people...
Well, seems to me, if we don't know that it's happened at the moment, we never will.
Fantastic.
It seems to me it's crossed the threshold.
But forgive me. You're a lawyer, and you said you want to make sure that we do everything that's absolutely right. You can't just say, it seems to me, if we don't know it's happened now, we never will. I mean, surely something of that ilk must be proven.
Yes, of course. And I'm saying it has been. The UN rapporteur says it's passed the threshold of genocide way back in February. So it has been.
Look, I think I'm right in saying they passed the threshold for a plausible risk of genocide. Is that not correct?
I'd imagine the presenter had to take a shower afterwards. He felt so dirty. Somebody said late last year, it was one of the most profound things I've ever read, actually, on social media. This is the first genocide that is being filmed and shared through smartphones and social media by the victims of it. It's all over the internet. Every bit of it, the genocide.
Yes. It's slightly more than that now. That was then. That was an earlier judgment this year. Since then.
But forgive me, has that been proven in court?
Say forgive me again. I dare you. I double dare you.
No, not yet. It hasn't been proven in court yet. If you wait for that, Gaza will be ended.
Fantastic. If we wait for enough proof to drag him into court, there'll be no Gaza.
The whole point about the ICJ is it's saying, actually, there is a plausible case. We need to obviously have a hearing on it.
Well, fine. But then should we just put all murder people accused of murder straight away? We don't have to wait for the court case. Why wait for that?
No, well, listen, because the murder that's happened is rather different. This is continuing actions, which I think anyone who's in the law who is asked, do the actions of the Israeli government and the statements they've made about why they're doing it, not all of them, but cabinet members, the deputy speaker of the Knesset and so on, have made very clear that they have an ambition. The ambition is to erase Gaza. Now, they're saying that. I don't have to prove it. They're admitting they're saying that. Plus, they've killed 35,000 people, mostly women, children, and children, that is, young children, infants and babies, have been targeted by snipers. They're not, you know, posing a threat of any kind whatsoever.
And that's one of the reasons I believe when October 7th happened, we were very sceptical about some of the stories that the Israeli government was putting out. So they claimed at the time that the Hamas militants or terrorists, whatever you want to call them, were raping the victims in front of children, they were beheading babies. Do you remember all of that bollocks? None of which was ever proven because it never happened. I'm not saying Hamas militants didn't massacre Israeli citizens. That seems plausible to me. But the claims they made about beheading babies, nonsense. And I opined at the time, and others, that these horror stories Israel had invented on October 8th and October 9th was because of what was to come. This is the irony. We'll tell lies, pork pies, fantasy stories about babies being beheaded because in reality we're going to spend the next 6, 7, 8 months murdering men, women and children in Gaza. And our justification for it will be the atrocities on October 7th. That was Michael Mansfield doing incredibly well to keep his patience with a moronic Sky News presenter challenging whether or not it's genocide. It is a stated genocide. They stated it. And not only that, the would-be Prime Minister of this country, the leader of the opposition party, way back in October, Keir Starmer, said that Israel was justified in withholding food and water from the Palestinians. I'm not paraphrasing him. That is exactly what he said. This is the Richie Allen Show, nearly 26 minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock. One or two of you have said to me, you said it was 5 earlier, Richie. Old habits die hard. That's it, I think. Old habits do die hard. Not too far from now, we're going to be meeting a band called Whom by Fire. They've launched their own record label called Wrong Think Records. They've had to put up with a lot of cancellation because they've spoken out, amongst other things, they've spoken out against the sexualization of children. It'll be a really interesting chat, that. I've got some music from the band as well. Dan was on the programme last year. He phoned in. Very articulate, very interesting. Nice to have him back. Will we move on from Gaza for the moment? Or do you want to hear a little bit of a ferocious exchange on talk radio earlier? So Julia Hartley Brewer is interviewing an activist whose name is Steve Headley. Now, I, before today, never heard of Steve Headley. That doesn't mean anything. He might be very well known. I just never came across him. They've called him an activist. He's from Northern Ireland, and it sounds to me very much like he's a Republican, does Headley. And this is crazy stuff. Have a listen. This is old school shock jock radio from New York back in the 1980s. It's mad stuff. Julia Hartley Brewer and a crazy man called Steve Headley.
So therefore, you are a perpetrator of genocides.
Oh, no. Oh,
yes, you are. You're a genocide enabler.
I haven't had that one, but I've been called so many things in the last 6 months. I'm now a perpetrator of genocide as well.
You're
a paid liar. I'm a paid liar. Oh, yeah, upset. Anyway, so should we have a conversation or just carry on just shouting insults?
Let's do that.
Maybe this is part of the problem with this argument, isn't it? Right. I dispute, based on fact, the use of the word genocide because we're...
How many
let me finish, for the love of God.
How many dead children do you want, Juliet? How many dead children can you stomach before it's a genocide?
How many dead children, how many dead Jewish children can you stomach
none,
from Hamas?
Absolutely none, exactly. Because I don't support
the reason,
Hamas. I do not justify genocide.
Don't you?
No.
Okay.
But you obviously support the killing of Palestinian children. Go on, condemn it then. Condemn the killing of Palestinian children.
As my regular audience
will
know.
Condemn the killing of Palestinian children.
If you stop talking for a nanosecond, I have on every single day since the war, not since Hamas perpetrated.
Condemn the killing of Palestinian children.
Let me finish a sentence. Thank God I'm not Mrs. Headley. Good grief.
Condemn Israel. Condemn Israel. Go on.
No, I don't condemn.
Condemn Israel. Condemn the killing of Palestinian children.
Stop shouting at me.
Condemn it. You won't condemn it.
I think she does quite well, to be honest.
It's like talking to myself.
Condemn it.
I have.
Condemn it. Condemn Israel.
Shut up.
Condemn Israel.
Steve.
Condemn Israel.
Steve. Shut up.
Condemn Israel, Julia.
Shut up.
Won't you condemn the genocide,
Julia?
You're a boorish,
bullying man.
Won't you condemn the genocide, Julia?
I will if you shut up.
Go on then.
Then shut up.
Condemn Israel.
Stop talking.
Condemn Israel.
Close your mouth.
Condemn Israel. Condemn Israel. Go on.
Yeah. I think Headley was invited on to do exactly what he did, which is make an idiot of himself. You know, there are dozens of men and women who feel like Steve Headley might feel. He sounded a bit like a grandstander to me, to be honest. Sounded a bit like Ken O'Keefe. Remember that idiot? Lots of men and women who feel very strongly about the genocide in Gaza, who would be able to articulate it much better in the company of Julia Hartley Brewer and maybe sway the minds, maybe change the opinions of the very conservative audience listening in. They choose these guys deliberately, you know that, don't you? They do. It's an old tactic, boy. I don't want to say the right, because that would be unfair, but it's an old tactic by the mainstream media. Get some ranting lunatic on, screaming and shouting, acting like a complete fool, doing his cause no good whatsoever. Brewer did quite well. I watched more of it. I'm not going to subject you to much more of it. It's 4:30 now. Would you believe it's 4:30? Come here and I tell you, do you like a takeaway? Do you? How often do you order a takeaway? Are you so pure of body, mind and spirit that you don't order takeaways? We do. I'm going to face up. I've thought about it, and I took out my phone and I went onto an app just so I could have the accurate figures for the Baldy Gammon's takeaway habits. On average, in 2024, on average, it is once a fortnight. And it is different types of takeaways. It'll be, for us, it'll be a pizza, never a kebab, sometimes a bit of KFC original recipe. I love KFC original recipe. There are other recipes as well. But Britain is eating 50% more takeaways than before COVID. Now, this is true, they claim. This is a really big study, right, into habits pre- and post-lockdown. What were we doing before lockdown? That has changed drastically since lockdowns in 2020 and 2021. The UK, Britain, is eating 50% more takeaways than before COVID. And this is being labelled a drastic shift in the nation's eating habits. So fast food and delivery services like Deliveroo and Uber Eats have overtaken pubs and restaurants as the main source of meals prepared outside the home. Isn't that staggering? Fast food and delivery services have overtaken pubs and restaurants and cafes as the main source of meals that are prepared outside our homes. Now, economists are saying that the shift to eating on the sofa appears to be one of the enduring changes left by what they're calling the COVID crisis. And this spells further trouble for the already struggling high street hospitality sector. However, the pubs and restaurants industry is insisting that there is confidence of a bounce back once the memory of the pandemic and cost of living crisis passes. Do you hear that? So people working within hospitality are saying we're still confident that pubs and restaurants will bounce back once the memory of the pandemic and the cost of living crisis has passed. Anti-obesity campaigners are warning the takeaways were taking over high streets and making it harder for people to eat healthily. It's amazing, isn't it? 50% more. We collectively are eating 50% more takeaways than before COVID. KFC original recipe, eh? I remember years ago, we'd been living in Spain for around 3 years and we were eating very well, Mediterranean diet. I hadn't eaten a single takeaway, honestly, in 3 years, not even a Chinese, nothing at all. And a mate of mine, Billy, said to me, he said, Richie, will you drive me to Marbella, 30 miles down the coast road? Sure, go on, says I. What do you want to go to Marbella for? And he says, I want to go to La Cañada. Now, if you know the Costa del Sol, you'll know La Cañada. It's a big shopping complex in Marbella. And he said, I want KFC. And I said to him, is there a KFC down there running for my car keys? Yes, he says. We were like Bo and Luke Duke in the car, racing down to Marbella, bought a bucket of KFC, hadn't eaten it for 3 years. I started crying. I was delighted. Fantastic. What's your takeaway of choice? Don't tell me. I'm only joking. 50% more being ordered since COVID. That's not good, is it? It can't be. We've spent a bit of time this week on the programme discussing Scotland's new hate speech laws, which are, as in a way, hysterically funny. You have to see the bright side of it, as they are draconian and disturbing. Now, the former leader of the Liberal Democrats, Tim Farron, was on Times Radio, and he was asked about these new hate crime laws in Scotland.
Police Scotland have received more than 3,000 hate crime reports since the law was introduced on Monday. You'll know yourself, it creates a new crime of stirring up hatred over protected characteristics like age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, transgender identity, or being intersex. There's nothing in this legislation about sex. All five Scottish Lib Dems voted in favour of the hate crime legislation back in 2021. Do you, Tim Farron, support this legislation?
Well, it seems to me, first of all, I think it's beholden on all of us in public life and in private life to use language which is kind and thoughtful and doesn't go out to stir up dissension and indeed create hate. I am somebody who thinks that the law should be light on these matters. The danger is that we end up creating martyrs and that we end up criminalising speech, which is, you know, wrong, and I wouldn't do it, and I'd strongly encourage others not to do it. I'm just not quite so sure we should be adding to layers of law that police the way in which people express themselves.
Right, so that sounds like you don't think that the law was needed.
Well, the good thing, one of the great things about the United Kingdom is that we're moving, hopefully inexorably, to being a federal state. And Scotland is a devolved part of the United Kingdom, and they made the decision that they did. I think if similar legislation came to the UK Parliament affecting England, I'd like to think we'd give it more scrutiny than the SNP did and the SNP allowed. The idea that we'll refer to as hate speech, but utterly unkind, gratuitous language, no, civilised people, decent people shouldn't use it. I think if it came before the Westminster Parliament, I would be very reluctant to criminalise people, even people who are being unpleasant.
What an arsehole. He didn't say outright that he would vote against it. He said he would be very reluctant. And he ignored her question. She said the five Liberal Democrat MSPs voted in favour of the bill back in 2021. And why? And he ignored that part of the question too. I used to hate them, you know, during my days in mainstream radio. I hated them. All of them. Well, apart from the lefties, I've got to be honest. But I used to go harder on the lefties just in case I would be outed as a lefty. I don't know if that makes any sense. I would interview lefties and I would give them a lot of stick. Anyway, thank you, Sue. I did mention that, yes, the Tories have launched a probe into Alan Duncan. That doesn't sound good, does it? A disciplinary probe. Hi to Ardle. He says, the cynical side of me says it's because this is now the 180-degree turn by the British media on Gaza. The cynical side of me, says Ardle, is because UK nationals have been killed and public opinion may have swung. LBC, like other mainstream media, they do follow the listener viewer number, says Ardle. You might be right. Are they, says Kaz, hi Kaz, are they trying to deflect just how invested our Zionist leaders are in the destruction of Palestine? Are you thinking of one particular thing, Kaz? Let me know. Hi to Dave Hill. Hello, Dave. He says, Richie, the Knights Templar fought over the region that is now Israel 500 years ago, he says. Christianity originated from the area. What is it about such a tiny country like Israel? Invisible galactic star ports, he asks, like David thinks. David Icke, wormhole ports or a very powerful ley line or energy vortex maybe around Israel. There was no oil when the Knights Templars fought over what is now Israel, so it can't be just about the oil, he says. Hi to Paul in Scotland. Thank you, Paul. Good evening to Lewis, who says, that gobshite presenter was totally put in his place by Mansfield. Mansfield would be a very good arguer, wouldn't he, Lewis? He'd be a very good public speaker and a very good debater. He better be, as a human rights barrister who's had many successes over the years. Hi to Cavan. Regarding Israel, Richie, could it be that certain power brokers in the West who are invested in the Israel project are fearful now of a backlash and so now are opposed to Netanyahu's approach because they believe he is politically toxic? He has been doing tremendously well, Netanyahu, at destroying whatever standing Israel had on the international stage, and maybe now these power brokers wish to exert pressure on Israel in order to get rid of him and prevent him from doing any more damage to the state. That's from Cavan. Thank you, Cavan. It's a well thought out argument, that might be the case. He is a member of the union, says Max, and is from Derry. Is that right, this guy Steve Headley? Is he a unionist? I thought he might be a Republican. The reason I say that is because later on in the interview, he criticised the British government for committing genocide in Northern Ireland. So maybe I've gotten it wrong, maybe. I might have done. I might have gotten it wrong. A number of you have come on to tell me takeaways are not food, they are toxic crap. yeah, that might be the case. Moderation, I say, once a fortnight for my bucket of KFC, and I'm never changing. Baird says, look forward to hearing the band. And then he asks a question about the band's name. I'll come back to that. That's a good question. When we have Eliza and Dan on the programme in a minute, let me just copy and paste the question. Very good here by myself. All by myself, he says, sending himself flowers. Hi to Will B. I think people go out for dinner less and have home delivery instead cheaper. Still no cooking for mum, says Will B. Thank you. Hi to Steve, who says, Richie, if I can bring it up here. I've given up takeaway since COVID, Richie. I think I just instinctively do the opposite to what's going on in the rest of the world. It's been quite easy to leave the takeaways behind, he says. Good man yourself. Hi to Richie. He says, Richie, speaking of O'Keefe, I saw him on a programme 2 weeks ago. I wouldn't have watched it, but I had to check it wasn't old footage, and it wasn't. It was recent, says Richie. Thank you, Richie. Hi to Kay. Aren't takeaways expensive? They are. Hence, once a fortnight, Kay. They are expensive. Delivery charges and whatnot. Eating healthy is not expensive, she says. Maybe people have forgotten how to cook from scratch, maybe. Maybe they have. Maria is in Surrey. Hello, Maria. 50% takeaway increase doesn't surprise me at all. My former neighbour used to get one cup of coffee delivered from Nero's every morning. You're kidding me, Maria. Ordering a coffee to be delivered from Nero's. That's madness. The lady across the road orders a delivery a good 3 times a week. I know this, she says, because sometimes the driver delivers to us by mistake. Thank you for the clarification, Maria. I was just about to accuse you of being a curtain twitcher. A bit of a spy, Maria, I was going to say. Lucy's in Northern Ireland. I've never eaten KFC. We have takeaway once a fortnight too. We eat in restaurants most weekends. We have noticed less QR codes on the restaurant tables, which is pleasing, says Lucy. Lots of comments coming in to the Richie Allen Show today via the app. And again, I apologise. I'm struggling to open my own website. But the website is going to come offline in a week or two for a few days. It'll be rebuilt even, and it'll come back, hopefully, all bells and whistles. It is 18 minutes to the top of the hour. Now, we will hear music from Home by Fire a little bit later on, but to neatly segue to the band, it's The Cure. It's The Cure. The Rich... Yeah, 14 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. The Cure, Just Like Heaven. The Richie Allen Show, the 4th of April, Thursday's programme. Couple of your messages very quickly before we chat with Whom by Fire. Thank you for the messages, by the way. Keep them coming in. Alexandra got in touch. Richie, I've never tried KFC. Is it really that good? I can't say any more about it, Alexandra, because it might come across as if I'm being paid by the franchise. I'm not. It is. It's decent, yeah. Original recipe, yeah. We had one in Waterford. I think KFC was the first American fast food franchise to arrive in Waterford City. I'm certain that is the case. It was many years later. We got the other ones, the McDonald's and the Burger Kings, but it's decent, it's all right, you know. Max came back to clarify, your man Steve Headley, who got into a spat with Julia Hartley Brewer, not a unionist, but a union rep. Thank you for the clarification, that makes sense. Hi to Marcus. Don't worry, we are going to die with the eclipse, he says. Oh, there is an eclipse, isn't there? A lunar, a full eclipse of the sun. It happens tomorrow, does it? Or Saturday, tomorrow, it could be tomorrow, yes. Neil says, I worked at KFC, Jesus wept, it never ends. I worked at KFC years ago, he says. For your information, the barbecue chicken is the previous day's leftover original recipe. Well, I don't care, Neil, because I eat the original recipe. That sounds funny, though. The bastards. Is that what they do? They sell BBQ chicken. I could be done for libel here if that's wrong, by the way. Hi to Gary Pears. Hi, Gary. Thank you for your kind words, pal. Really appreciate it. Hi to... Well, that's it for the messages, right? Let's leave the messages alone. Now, about a year ago, or thereabouts, on a phone in, Dan phoned in. Dan is a member of a band called Home by Fire. And he rang in to say, we were talking about cancellation, and we were talking about how it's becoming the thing, isn't it? Is that when people are outed as having certain opinions or or whatever. It could lead to them losing work. It could lead to them being kicked out of a gig or prevented from going on stage, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. It could result in you losing your job. So we've talked a lot about this over the years. So Dan came on and spoke about it. And since the show, it's happened again to Whom by Fire, including losing a church gig. And this has prompted the group to start their own record label. It's called Wrong Think Records. And they want it, the record label, to be a platform not only for Whom by Fire, but for other artists who are passionate about freedom of speech. And I'm delighted to welcome, from Whom by Fire, Dan and Eliza. Welcome. Welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hello. Yeah, very well, thank you.
Brilliant. It's nice to have you both on. And listen, whoever's speaking, just get a little bit close to the old phone or whatever it's on so we can hear you nice and clearly. So thanks for coming on today. Loads to talk about. I've got loads of questions for you. But Dan, if you want to remind us where this cancellation began, why you phoned up the show last year, what happened again? Remind us.
So initially, we were due to perform at a local festival called Lee Folk Festival. It's a festival that we performed at a number of times. And we received an email a few days before we were due to perform to say that we were being pulled from the lineup because of certain social media comments. It came to light that it was almost definitely to do with some comments that I made about a book reading that Southend Pride were promoting, which was a book called Towards a Gay Communism. And that book, it specifically endorsed paedophilia. So I think, you know, anyone hopefully would have a bit of a problem with that. What's more...
Dan, hang on a second. How did it specifically endorse paedophilia?
Well, Mario Melli, who was the author of the book, he, and this is a quote, he said paedophilia, necrophilia were ripe for redemption.
I wonder what he meant by that, ripe for redemption. Did anybody ever ask
him? Yeah. Well, it sounds like that's a pretty clear endorsement to me.
You know, around about the time you phoned in last year, I noticed a friend of mine was engaged in a fairly heated but still reasonably professional exchange with a paedophile group on Twitter who said, "We're paedophiles, but we don't act on it. We're good people," and yada, yada, yada. And this came up. I wonder, is that what the author was talking about? Redemption, in terms of there are paedophiles out, I'm not endorsing this now, by the way, but there are paedophiles out there who don't act on their desires, I wonder.
I think like based on what I know about the author, I haven't actually read the whole book, but he was somebody that he was talking about like necrophilia, right, having sex with animals. He was like famous for eating his own shit, things like that. So I think perhaps he wasn't talking about not acting on it.
Right. And just in case listeners are wondering if I've lost a marble or two, I haven't. I'd love to know. I'd like every paedophile who's fantasized about having sex with children, whether they act on it or not, I'd like every one of them to be signing a register, to be honest. I couldn't give a damn whether they've acted on it or not. There's always a potential there. So I'm not in any way trying to defend this, but this is very interesting. So you, understandably, you know, having read this, you're like, we shouldn't be giving these books to kids, and you lose a gig over it.
Yeah, basically that's what happened, yeah.
Wow. Eliza, what did you think yourself?
Yeah, well, obviously it was a bit of a shock, especially it being so close to when we were due to be performing, and to not really get any particular feedback from them as well was a bit disappointing as well when we queried it with them.
I'm not going to be curmudgeonly because I like the pair of you, but I'm going to throw a few curveball questions at you. Is there ever any tension? I mean, obviously not between you two, but I've read and heard about bands over the years where a member has made a statement, a political statement or otherwise, that has cost the band financially. Was there any part of you, Eliza, tempted to say to Dan, listen, shut up about it. You know what I mean? Going forward, you know. Go ahead.
No, because I'd be then just as bad as the people that we're now experiencing. I would never say to Dan to be silent about his opinions, and his opinions are valid and they're the same opinions that I hold. So that would be very hypocritical of me to do that.
Yeah, it would. And it's terribly, terribly wrong in any case that you could be lined up to appear in a festival. And I remember this conversation vividly last year, and that they could cut you out of it because of something so harmless as expressing an opinion about something which is contentious. So it's a contentious issue, but it's a harmless thing to do to offer an opinion on it. And Dan tells me that this has happened since then. It's not the first or the last time it's happened.
Yeah, that's right.
What's been going
on? It's continued.
So it's happened a few times, actually. Several gigs have been like targeted. We've found out that there's been complaints from South End Pride or their associates. They've contacted venues that we've been playing at and tried to get our gigs pulled. Some of them have been pulled. A few of the venues have not gone along with the demands of South End Pride, which has been really good. It's been a bit of a mixed bag, to be honest, but we were due to perform in St Mark's Church in South End, which is somewhere that we've performed before, and incidentally nobody was harmed, and it was a good night, but we were told that we're not welcome there anymore. So due to them being an inclusive church, which I thought was an interesting use of the word inclusive.
What I'm finding, Eliza, listening to you today, and I get emails from other people who've been, you know, disinvited even from doing something, it might be giving a talk or something, is that one of the tactics is not to offer any explanation. In other words, dear Eliza, dear Dan, we've decided not to go ahead with the gig because we read X, Y, or Z. A tactic is not to give any explanation. Is that what you're encountering?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had very open dialogue with the caretaker and the vicar from the church at the start of all of this. As soon as they gave us the reason that we were supporting anti-queer stories, as soon as we questioned that to give examples, that they came back with nothing. The conversation ended. We weren't even able to speak to anyone directly involved in that. So, yeah, it's it's been rather frustrating not being able to have an open dialogue.
Yeah, because there must be a real sense of injustice there, because if you can get in front of somebody who might be about to cancel you, you might say, listen, we're not anti anything. What we believe is, and now I don't want to be expressing your opinions. You have all the time you want to do that. But I'm guessing it's a case of, look, children shouldn't be asked to try and comprehend any of this stuff. I mean, is that really it for the both of you?
A lot of it is down to the sexualisation of children, not just with that book reading, but with drag for kids as well. We're very much opposed to that. A lot of it, and what's going on in schools as well, more recently, what's coming over from America to the UK schools has been a little bit worrying and concerning for us too, with libraries being full of dodgy books that children can just pick up from the shelves, and obviously parents not having much of a say anymore in their children's education.
Yeah, these are books with theories that are contested. They're not facts, they are theories, and they're being presented to children as if they are facts. Dan, I was thinking, you know, before we talk about the record label, while on the one hand it's disappointing and disheartening to be cancelled because you know, to all intents and purposes, you are an activist as well as a musician and a singer-songwriter. While it's disheartening, there's also undoubtedly a groundswell of opposition to a lot of this queer theory stuff. And within that, there might be opportunities for the band, is there? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of people opposing this, and many of them might have venues, they might have festivals of their own. Is that could it also be opening doors for the group?
Yeah, I think so. It's been quite challenging being a musician, because I think the music scene is quite woke, but amongst that there's quite a large fringe minority who feel that they haven't been able to express themselves how they want to. And I think actually now is a really good time for people to start speaking out. And I mean, we've found, whilst we have been cancelled from a few gigs, we found a lot of people have come to us and offered us gigs and their support. And it's been, I would say it's been mainly positive. So we just really want to encourage other people to, you know, if you've got something to say, don't be afraid to say it. And I think not saying it is, you know, is something that's, you know, if you don't say something that you feel is true, then you're allowing yourself to be bullied. So so just go for it. And I think there will be people there to support you.
Now, listen, either of you jump in at any time, right? I don't want to be calling on Eliza. So whenever you feel like saying something, jump in. I want to ask you, I grew up in Ireland in the late 1980s, early 1990s, as a real lover of live music. It's all I ever did was go and watch live bands, specifically bands playing their own material. I wasn't averse to the odd cover band if they were good, but I loved the Irish rock bands of the late 80s, early 90s. And it was a wonderful time, Eliza, to be alive in Ireland, because the country was full of thriving pubs, and the pubs were very much inclined to want to be putting on bands, new young bands playing their own material. Talk to me, especially in light of what has happened in the last 3 years and the terrible negative news about pubs and venues closing. And I don't want to make this a negative interview, but it's also an important question. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what it is like being a group, playing your own material in 2024, trying to get in front of live audiences to play your music and to grow your audience, to grow your fan base. How difficult is that today? I have got to imagine it's maybe more difficult than ever before. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, it is becoming increasingly difficult. We did have a really great community, a real hub in our community, at a local pub that was absolutely incredible, and it had such an incredible vibe, and so many different eclectic musicians would meet there, and it was a great opportunity. A lot of touring bands would come to Southend, and they'd come especially to the Railway Hotel as part of their gigs, their circuit.
It was one of the few venues, you know, we're from Southend, venues that mainly just catered for original acts as well.
Yeah, so. They had all sorts, and it was great. And then during the course of lockdown, it closed down. And that was a real, real challenge for all the artists in the local area trying to find other places to play, because that became a little bit of a safety net for a lot of us. And so it became much more of a challenge to think a little bit more like, oh, we're going to have to find other places. We're going to have to trek back to London and, you know, try and find some other places. So, yeah, it has been really, really tough. And it continues to be so, especially now we've got all this going on.
all of this, yeah. And before we talk about Wrong Think Records, and we're going to talk quite a bit about that in a moment, you said there's a community, so there would be a bit of camaraderie between the bands and the singers who are doing their own material. Is hiring a venue and sharing the cost, spreading it out amongst a group of artists, and then putting on a night where I suppose you'd have murders over who goes on first, wouldn't you, and who finishes the night? But doing it like that, is that something that people are kind of turning to? You know, let's hire a venue, let's get some groups we know, let's put it on and get people to come and watch us. Is that going to be the case now going forward?
Well, for us personally, following the last cancellation from the church gig, luckily we were able to we were invited by another local church to play there instead. And the vicar was there, and it was a wonderful evening, and he's really encouraged us to put on regular nights there. So we've got our own PA stuff going on now, so it's becoming much easier to have more control over that. So, yeah, hoping that would be a good start.
It sounds good because I'm not, you know, I genuinely mean it. I don't think there's ever been a tougher time for musicians and artists playing their own material because venues are shrinking. The available places are shrinking. And I'm not trying to upset you by saying that because you know this, right? I don't want to come off all negative, but I'm reading the bloody broadsheets every day of the week and hundreds of venues closing every 6 months. And these were venues that catered for talent like yourselves. Yes. But I love the idea of launching your own record label. And I've got to commend you on the name. It's a brilliant name. It really is a brilliant name because it's memorable. Wrong Think Records. Yes. Well, I asked the dumbest question, will I, on British radio today. Why did you call it Wrong Think Records? Go on. That's a joke, by the way. It's obvious why you called it Wrong Think Records. but what do you hope to achieve with it? Where could it go, the record label?
Well, the aim of the record label is really to provide a platform for other artists who may be frightened to stand out or speak out, and for these musicians to know that we're here, we're going through it too, and we're not putting up with it or backing down. And we want to create a community that's like a beacon of light and hope for others whose number one priority is to play their music without fear, which I think is a really important thing.
I think it's brilliant. And I've got questions about how it works now in a moment. But before I do, you sent me a Linktree link with your links, right? And for some reason, it won't allow me in unless I create a Linktree account, which I can't do while I'm on air, obviously. I mean, I might.
Okay.
So I can't do it on air. So give us the links. Where can people go to find out more about Wrong Think Records? But more importantly, to find out more about yourselves, about the band.
So, yeah, so our we've got our album coming out in the beginning of May, and you can pre-order our album at Plastic Head Megastore, which is plastichead.com. And then link to tickets to our album release night, that's on www.ticketlab.co.uk, and then you just search for Home by Fire and the event will come up and you can get tickets from that. But yeah, it's like Home by Fire. We've got like Facebook, Twitter, or whatever it is, X. YouTube, all the usual places, Instagram.
And I mean, if there's any bands that want to reach out to us about Wrong Think Records, you can get through to us at wrongthinkrecords@hotmail.com.
Yeah.
Great. You can send over WhatsApp. You can send me some of these links later and I can then obviously put them on the pod, on the podcast notes. Yes. Just for listeners who are tuning in a little bit late, we're speaking with Home by Fire. That's Dan and Eliza, a British group from Southend, successful group. They've had their issues with cancellations in the last 12 months because Dan and Eliza have taken a stand against the sexualisation of children. And they've seen gigs cancelled on the back of this, which is not good at all. So they've started their own record label called Wrong Think Records. They wanted to be a platform for artists who are passionate about free speech and a place where you don't have to worry about being cancelled, essentially. So tell me, you'll be able then, so if a group or an individual solo artist says, right, I've got some material, I want to record it, so you'll be able to facilitate the studio, the engineer, and even a producer. Is that right? You'll be able to do it all.
So our album that we've just recorded, we've got our own studio, so we recorded it all ourselves. And we've been really fortunate in that we've got a really good distribution deal with Plastic Head Records. And they've been really supportive to us. So, I mean, it's quite early days as to what we can and can't offer, but you know, hopefully all of the sort of things that would be needed are there. So, we would be really keen to hear from any artists who find themselves in similar positions.
You're two very talented people. Please answer me this if you can. Why does so much music played on radio today, if I go into Spotify now, for example, and I don't want to beat up on modern, younger musicians. I do not want to do that because I do sometimes hear a gem. I do sometimes hear a gem and I think this is very good. I wouldn't be an expert now, but I worked on commercial radio for years and I know a hit when I hear it. Why do we think that so much music sounds similar? Why does it sound the same? What's going on in the composition of modern pop songs that makes it all sound same-ish? Or am I talking through my backside? Either one of you.
Well, I think it goes down to the sort of live music thing again, because like most of the bands today are tribute acts. So, you know, and it's a guaranteed seller to be a tribute act. So I think most of the original in it's not really original music. It's just like regurgitated things that they may have heard, and they've tried to sound exactly the same as something that's come previously.
Yeah, I think also art as a whole is becoming much more of an immediate hit as well. So if something doesn't grab you straight away, then it's not going to be listened to. Everything's very quick. Everything's got to be 30 second this, 20 second that. So listening to music that should develop, you don't necessarily need to listen to something the first time and be completely blown over by it. Some music takes time, some art takes time to really sort of revel in and enjoy and find love from. So I think today's culture is much more based on an instant hit, and that goes against much more sort of songwriting that spends a little bit more time, is a bit more deliberate, and I think that could be something to do with it too.
Yeah, a lot of people today are quite uncomfortable with genuine like raw emotions, and a lot of the sort of narratives you hear in music today is just like Eliza was saying, it's very sort of straight away hit. It's very shallow though.
With meaningless lyrics, that they're not really saying exactly very much at all. That's what I notice. Even when I hear a good melody, I mean, there are other services besides Spotify. I don't want to sound like I'm promoting it, but with Spotify, you can bring up the lyrics, and they're often boring and juvenile, and they don't say anything at all unless I'm misunderstanding the meaning most of the time, but I don't think I am. So there's no... And here's another question for you on songwriting, which fascinates me. When did rock and roll hit us? Mid-50s, right? So rock and roll mid-50s. Pop music has been around for 70, 80 years. Chart radio, chart music, chart compilations have been around for 60, 70 years. Is it becoming increasingly difficult to compose a new melody in terms of a new, really catchy hook, because everything has been done before? Every possibility has been exhausted. Or am I wrong? Are there still many, many possibilities in chord progressions and stuff?
I certainly find it quite challenging to write new songs. I always have. I end up stumbling on something that I've written before, or something that somebody else has written. So I think that's always been a challenge, though.
The worst thing that I can possibly do is if Dan starts playing something like, "Oh, what do you think of this?" And I'm like, "Isn't that Radiohead?
Oh,
isn't that Nirvana?"
I wrote a really good version of Stay Away to Heaven.
There you go.
Yeah, that's it. And I did hear a musician speaking about this on, it might have been the BBC One show, speaking about this very thing, Dan, struggling when creating progressions on a guitar or a piano and thinking, oh God, it was in my head that it was brilliant. But then when they play it, it's like, oh no, it sounds very similar to this or to that. I have a theory about this. I think that royalties should be, now you'll probably completely disagree with this, and fair play if you do, but they should be finite. I think they go on forever at the moment, don't they, royalties? I mean, like Bono's great grandchildren will probably be living off of With or Without You, you know, or Madonna's great grandchildren. But surely they should be finite. You shouldn't have ownership of that melody forever. What do you think?
Ooh.
25 years, 30 years, 40 years. Yeah, because you know, the note doesn't belong to anybody. Yes, the
note doesn't.
No, but the creativity does, obviously. So if you put six notes together and it sounds lovely and then you write a lyric over it. Listen, I agree. People shouldn't just be allowed to rip that off. But I don't know, 40 or 50 years down the line, I mean, come on, you know. Maybe retire that.
Once that person's gone and... Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. No artist in the world would agree with me, by the way. I'm going to put that out there straight away. But before we hear the song, and which we're going to hear in a moment, before we part company today, give us those links again. Wrong Sync Records. Give us the link to where people can pre-order your forthcoming album. That's most important. And I will put that on the podcast notes as well.
It's www.plastichead.com. And you can just search for Home by Fire and our album will come up.
Plastichead.com.
Plastichead.
Lovely.com. I'm writing it down now. And then search Home by Fire and you'll find the link to the album, yeah?
Yeah.
Brilliant. You're on Twitter, you're on YouTube as well. Yeah. And it's been brilliant talking to you today. I love your positive attitude towards all the cancellations. It'll serve you all the best in the world. It will. Tell us about the song we are going to play, and then we'll say goodbye and I'll play it. What song are we going to hear then?
So it's a song called "Sing My Song," and it's basically about our experience with gigging and trying to you maintain a positive attitude really about what we're doing. So basically what you were saying just now, Richie, I think.
It was an absolute pleasure to speak with you again, Dan, and to meet you, Eliza. Continued success now, and don't be strangers.
Thank you, Richie.
Thanks so much. Have a great weekend. And bye for now. Dan and Eliza from Home by Fire. That's the name of the group. Check them out on YouTube, on Twitter. Go to plastichead.com and look for Home by Fire for information on how to pre-order their forthcoming album. And we'll play the song now and back in about 3.5 minutes.
Don't know where I'm going. to go home to. Everyone's not soulless. Everyone's not like you.
Sing My Song from Home by Fire on Thursday's Richie Allen Show. Dan and Eliza, thanks to them for coming on. YouTube, you'll find them. You'll find them on Twitter. And again, and I will put this on the podcast notes, of course, later on, plastichead.com, and look for Home by Fire for more of the music. I really like that. I really do. It's 19 minutes past the hour of 5 o'clock. Neil was in touch. Richie, Joan Jett had to do a similar thing when they created Blackheart Records, because the big boys wouldn't give them the time of day, says Neil. Polly says, Miley Cyrus's new song, Flowers, is really good, but no doubt, says Polly, there is an attack on art in general. It seems to lack creativity, which is dangerous to governments, as it encourages imagination and feelings of happiness. Happy people are much more difficult to control than depressed and repressed people, says Polly. Yes, a very good friend of mine who often gets mentioned on this programme. The... What does my very good friend often say to me? Well, theatres, of course, and theatres are no... they don't have any get-out-of-jail card when it comes to venues closing down. It's entertainment venues in general. But even pubs, the lifeblood of the community, theatres are soul food. Of course, what we've seen in the last 3 years, on the face of it, right, lock people down, make people sad, make people unhappy, make them angry, mess up the minds of children. But it was also to do things like to completely turn on its head the things that we used to take for granted, congregating together, you know, beer gardens. It doesn't have to be alcohol, but anywhere outdoors that where we would go, events, to do things with people, to be around people. You're not necessarily speaking to every person that you are attending a concert or a recital or an art gallery, which you're not, but you're out there with people, and that energy is very good and very positive. And they've definitely gone after that in the last couple of years. Did it on the Papers podcast last week. You're looking at 500 to 1,000 more pubs so far this year in the country have gone bust. And not because they were badly run, but because of what happened in the last 3 years, 4 years, because of rising business rates, because the lockdowns have completely changed, not everybody, but many people. Their habits have been changed. We talked about it earlier on. People, the nation as a whole, buying 50% more takeaways than previously, than pre-2020. Yes, Home by Fire, WHOM, Home by Fire. Thank you to Bike. Hi to John Taylor. Hi, John. That's your opinion, John. I appreciate it. Hi to Dave. Loving the tune, Richie. I wasn't expecting much from it, but it's very good. Thank you, Dave. I think Dave is thinking, why would any decent band be on the Richie Allen Show? That's a backhanded kick in the arse to me. Thanks, Dave. I attract everybody. Me. Great songs, says Claire. Reminds me of the band of Monsters and Men. Wish Home by Fire all the success in the world. Thank you, Claire. Hi to Tim, who says, fantastic to hear grounded new music from honest artists. Good tune. Definitely a bit of festival Radiohead influence in there. Hi to Kevin Tyrone. Love it. A break from the shite that is called music these days, says Kev. Hi to KJ, who says, it sounds great. I'll be a monkey's uncle if it goes straight to number one in the hit parade. Yes. And that's a question I should have asked Eliza and Dan. And it was on my mind to ask them. I'll ask them in the future. Getting airplay must be extremely difficult. You know, I can't say that I know exactly how Radio 2, Radio 1, Capital, the global stations, the stations run by Bauer, I don't know how they operate their playlists these days. I don't know. But I imagine for any independent band, any new band, getting a song played must be very, very difficult indeed. It must be. Is there a John Peel anymore? Is there in radio playing music from new artists? Now, you might say, there is, Richie. on some station in Nova Scotia or some station in Edinburgh or some community station in East Ham. Yes, but is there a commercial station run by one of the conglomerates that dedicates a programme to playing brand new music from unsigned or relatively new artists? Independence, what do you think? Is there such a programme? When I worked at WLRFM in Ireland many years ago, there was such a programme. It was presented by a bloke called Roddy Clear, and he played brand new music from Irish bands, from Irish solo artists who hadn't been signed yet, but who had sent in demos. Is such a place, is such a station doing anything like that today? I'd love to know this. I'm not sure there is. Hi to Johnny. Thank you, Johnny, for the link. Hi to James, who says, that song was very good. It didn't sound like anything I've heard before. Good luck to Whom By Fire, says James. These are lovely comments coming in. They are greatly appreciated, I imagine. Whom By Fire are thrilled. Thursday's Richie Allen Show, the time 24.5 minutes past the hour. Faisal reckons, and I don't often get an approval, an agreement from Faisal. I do sometimes. It's good, it's good, it's good. Richie, I agree with you. Copyright was originally meant to last 7 years, and most people agree that it should last at least the lifetime of the artist. But the present law that extends it indefinitely, there is currently no limit, says Faisal, it stifles creativity and creates a minefield for artists in the present. Remember the trouble Men at Work got into? I do vaguely, off the top of my head, but I'd probably have to look it up online now, but I do vaguely remember. Yes, yes. It's a contentious one. I could put it to Richard and Fred from Right Said Fred in the future. Now, Richard and Fred have had some absolutely colossal hits, right? Imagine you said to Richard and Fred, tell you what, lads, you only get copyright for 7 years. They'd probably behead me for saying that. And maybe they'd be right to behead me for saying it. But yeah, because it might be stifling creativity somewhat in terms of there's only so many chord progressions that you can, you know, invent before you've exhausted every one of them. I don't know. Like I said, I heard a musician on the One Show on the BBC some months ago talking about the difficulty these days of composing an original melody that is brilliant. Oh, that's a great riff, that. Oh, that's a great riff. Oh, Jesus. These days they're using artificial intelligence to offset any potential problems with breaching somebody else's copyright. Isn't that amazing? That is amazing. I think it is in any case. Hi to Cookie. The first busker I saw after lockdown had me dancing like a nutter, says Cookie. Many people joined in. Music is so important. It is so important. Whom By Fire, says Bob, sounds better than the Bruce Springsteen shit you like, Richie. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. Thomas says, that was a great song. Can anyone explain the appeal of Ed Sheeran? A Galway Girl is terrible. There is no appeal to Ed Sheeran, at least not from this broadcaster. However, there must be something going on with Ed Sheeran. I mean, he does have royal approval, doesn't he? He has a scar on his cheek because the idiot got pissed up with those ugly sisters. Fergie's kids. Andrew's kids. God, they're horrible, aren't they, the two of them? They wouldn't get a kick in a stampede. Speak about yourself, Baldy. I know. This is why I can say things like that. I know. I look at myself in the mirror. I say, Quasimodo. I can say what I like about the ugly sisters. God, they're horrible, the two of them. Eugenie and Beatrice. Ed Sheeran went on the piss with the two of them. Went back to one of their many stately homes. They jokingly said they were going to knight him and sliced open his cheek with a very sharp sword. That's a true story. Ed Sheeran is a dipstick. Jed says, BBC introducing showcases new music and artists. Is that the name of a programme, Jed? Because it's bloody awful. It's ruddy awful. BBC introducing showcases new music and artists. Yeah. Jenny says, the powers that be have been going after live music venues for some time now. Here in Ireland, they've really gone after buskers too. I also agree with Richie, there should be a limit on copyright for the arts, all of it. The trouble is, a lot of the rights are now owned by big companies. That is an excellent point, Jenny. And if people want to have a go at Bruce Springsteen, I've no problem with that because I don't get upset when my heroes are criticised. Isn't it funny how some people get really pissed off when you criticise something they like a lot? They take it personally. I've always found that very strange. I laugh when people, you know, lampoon or criticise or ridicule the boss because why wouldn't I? It's not going to make me love his music any less. But very good point, Jenny. And Bruce, the bastard. Bruce is one of them. Bruce sold his entire catalogue, didn't he? I'm not sure who he sold it to. I should know this as a devoted fan. I think he might have sold it to Sony. Now, I have an idea why Bruce Springsteen. He's not the only one. Number of major artists have sold their publishing rights to the biggest corporations in the world. And I think it might have something to do with our discussion, which is maybe people like Bruce Springsteen, they might see the writing on the wall. It might occur to them that copyright might be attacked at some stage in the near future. And maybe Sony and some of the other corporations who have spent billions buying catalogues, they might be buying a red herring, maybe. I don't know. I'd love to know. Very, very interesting subject is this. Thank you, Wayne, for the correction. Very important. Yes, it is the 8th of April, the total solar eclipse, and it will be visible in certain places in the north of England, including Manchester. Astrological eclipses are times of major transformations and new beginnings, says Wayne, whether for good or evil, both in our own lives and the world as a whole. It's an ideal time, says Wayne, for starting new projects and for those who practice magic to carry out rituals and spells. I hope I'm not on the wrong side of Wayne. He says the hidden hand will likely use this time for nefarious purposes, whereas we could use this time for the positive. Excellent stuff, Wayne. So maybe it's a very good time for the creation of or the launch of Wrong Think Records, maybe, by our guests, by Eliza and by Dan, maybe. I'm going to play something now. No idea what I'm going to play. Bit of Fleetwood Mac, yeah. Go Your Own Way. That's a Freudian slip. Music from Fleetwood Mac, that's Go Your Own Way. If you're just joining the programme, I suppose the big story of the day is that the former Conservative Party Foreign Minister Alan Duncan, who was knighted, you're supposed to refer to him as Sir Alan Duncan these days, in an extraordinary intervention. Duncan went on radio and television this morning and called out the most senior Conservative Party politicians and effectively accused them of shilling for Israel. And he called for them to be sacked. It's an amazing thing, really. Completely unexpected. You know, and we've been, well, especially in the first hour, we talked about the ramifications of it, if there will be any. But the motivation for it, what was Duncan doing and does it mean anything and can we get excited about it? I mean, it really is like nothing we've heard from a mainstream politician for many, many years. He called for Tom Tugendhat to be fired. Priti Patel, he called out for basically being a traitor, going to Israel when she was the Home Secretary on holiday without mentioning it to the government, without informing the Foreign Office. And then when she came back, going to bat for Israel on a number of issues that Israeli officials had obviously told her to do. I mean, this is an amazing thing. If you missed it, grab the monologue of the programme later on. So that's, I suppose, the big story. Later this afternoon, we learned the Conservatives have launched an investigation into his comments. And this one is definitely going to run and run. It seems there's been a change in the tone of the coverage of the genocide in Gaza. Maybe this change in the tone of the coverage is down to the 600 legal scholars, academics, judges and barristers who've said that the UK government is committing crimes against humanity itself, is breaching international law by continuing to send weapons to Israel. So that's the big story of the day today. And Following on from the murder of 7 aid workers by the Israelis on Monday, it has led to a number of charities suspending operations in Gaza out of fear that their own staff can be targeted. And this is exacerbating an already very difficult situation because famine has set in Israel, and there are some disgusting and disturbing and heart-wrenching photographs on social media, which I bloody well wish I hadn't seen, of the emaciated bodies of young Palestinian children. Photographs that remind you of the Michael Burke report from Ethiopia back in 1983. Awful stuff. So that's the big story. Today, we were talking about it earlier on. If you came in late, grab the monologue. Here's an interesting one. This is an amazing coincidence. The BBC, on its website 14 minutes ago, what a coincidence this is. Wait for it. 14 minutes ago. Hard rock band Kiss sells brand and songs for $300 million. Kiss. Gene Simmons et al. The hard rock band Kiss has sold its back catalogue of songs to a Swedish music investor for a figure thought to be upwards of $300 million, which in English pounds is around $237 million. The Stockholm-based Pop House Entertainment also bought the group's brand, likeness and intellectual property. The sale marks the band's retirement from live performances on their End of the Road World Tour. And the BBC article goes on to say, Bob Dylan and Bruce the Boss Springsteen have sold their back catalogues for multi-million dollar figures. Both artists sold to big music houses for $500 million in the case of Bob Dylan and $450 million in the case of Bruce. Although details of the Kiss deal have not been revealed, it is understood to be similar to that of the British band Genesis. But less than the back catalogue sale of Michael Jackson's work, Michael Jackson's estate sold it for $600 million. And that's a record. Selling your entire back catalogue. Wacko Jacko. $600 million. Why do you think it is? It's really interesting, this, isn't it? I mean, this is really interesting. Why are they doing it? Is it because there is a fear that in the near future that copyright will be deleted or removed? If that's the case, am I wrong to speculate that the Pop House who sold or who bought the back catalogue for $400 million or $300 million for Kiss Music, would they be out of pocket then? Is that how it might work? I have no idea. Speaking of music, Joe Liz says, the best music is classical. It's free to copy and to manipulate. A lot of people have made money from it, says Joe Liz. Hi to Heather, who says, Richie, in my opinion, Ed Sheeran is initiated into some sort of cult order. Occult. Occult order. It's only an opinion, Richie, but there is plenty of evidence, says Heather. Very interesting. Good evening to Brian, who says, it was James Blunt who cut Ed Sheeran with the sword. I read it in his autobiography. Thanks, Brian. That's interesting now, because I think one of the tabloids reported that it was one of the Ugly Sisters. But yes, if he said it was James Blunt, well, then it must have been James Blunt. That must have been some crack, that party, huh? James Blunt, Ed Sheeran and the Ugly Sisters from Buckingham Palace. I'd rather kill myself than go on the piss with the four of them, but that's just me. Wonderful. Speaking of great music, and not Ed Sheeran, of course, Whom by Fire, we heard the song earlier on, Sing My Song. Great song, says David, loved it. Great to hear the promotion of fresh music, fresh bands. Thank you. Hi to G-Man. Richie, fun fact, you can play 100 songs just using 4 chords. Status Quo used just 3, I think, or was it 4? I think you're right. 3. I think it was 3. Hi to Martin Orr. Priti Patel drew criticism not for visiting Israel. She invited opprobrium due to her holding meetings with members of the Israeli government and failing to report those meetings on her return. Yes, I did say that, didn't I? Or if I didn't, I should have said it. We talked about it extensively back when it happened. That's right, she had meetings with the Israeli government while on holiday in Israel. Didn't mention it to anybody in her own government, let alone the Foreign Office. Should have been arrested upon her return. I mean, that isn't a joke. protocol suggests she should have been arrested and debriefed at the very least. What the fuck, love? What are you doing going in to holidays, going on holidays in Israel, meeting the Israeli government and not informing the Prime Minister or the Foreign Secretary? Amazing. I mean, amazing, really, when you think about it. Fantastic. You know? Oh, God. Yeah. Brilliant. Listen, this is just about it for me today. I've had enough now today. It's been a mad few days. I'm looking forward. I'm with you all next week, but I'm looking forward to the following week when I will be away for a week. But that's it for today. Listen, the Papers podcast will be online tomorrow. Early doors, early morning tomorrow morning. And then I will be back with you on Monday. Yes, the Richie Allen Show will return on Monday. But I obviously won't be with you on Sunday morning as I would previously have been, because the Melodies is on hiatus until the 5th of May. So that's it for me today. Thank you for listening to the programme. Thanks to Dan and Eliza from Home by Fire. Loved the conversation. I've got some wonderful guests lined up for next week, by the way. It should be a really interesting week. So I'm going to leave you and love you with the aforementioned, I'm going to be cheeky, but tough shit, Paddy, the aforementioned Bruce. Have a fantastic weekend. Until next time we speak, it's bye from the BBG.